When you hear the phrase soft as steel, what do you think of? While the word steel might conjure up images such as massive high-rise buildings, where does the soft part come in? And what exactly does this mean in our work and in our lives? Welcome to the Soft as Steel podcast with your host, Dennis Duran, featuring engaging conversations with a wide range of industry leaders around soft skills, how we practice love, inclusion, social justice, and compassionate leadership that's everlasting in the workplace. And now, here's Dennis Duran.
I'm pleased to be joined on the Soft as Steel podcast by Joseph Joe Franke III, the dynamic president and founder of JV3 Associates, a true champion of leadership and mentorship. With an impressive career spanning over four decades, Joe has made an indelible impact in the world of executive coaching and talent development. He's not just a coach, he's a catalyst for growth. Joe's coaching prowess extends across 14 countries, where he's guided over 700 executives, veterans, and students. His unwavering commitment to helping individuals unlock their full potential shines through in every interaction. A West Point graduate and a combat veteran, Joe understands the power of teamwork like no other. His experiences have shaped his unique approach to leadership and mentorship. As an award-winning co-author of LinkedIn, The 5-Minute Drill for Executive Networking Success, Joseph's depth of knowledge and experience is unmatched. He knows how to leverage LinkedIn strategically for professional advancement. Joe's wealth of experience includes leading business projects worth up to $8 billion worldwide and managing a staggering 53,000 associates. His perspective on talent and career development is invaluable. Joe, welcome to the Soft as Steel podcast. And gosh, you've been doing some stuff.
Well, you know, I've been around the barn a couple of times. So, and I think we were talking about this the other day. I think I'm on my sixth career.
Yeah.
You know, but my first career is the military. I mean, I came out of high school and a month later I was in the Army. Mm-hmm. And 4 years at the academy and then 30 years on active duty all over the world in some of our best garden spots. Anyway, it provided me with a wealth of experience, especially in dealing with people, dealing with career development. It seems like in the Army, if you're a good leader, you're always trying to figure out how to get your subordinates to their next school, their next assignment, and their next promotion.
Yeah, yeah. You know, of course, from our initial conversation and doing a little bit of research about me, that I talk a lot about soft skills, which I define as being an individual's qualities, characteristics, behaviors, really a manifestation of their personal values. I think that your long career in the military was a place for you to learn much about soft skills, because it's not simply about doing the job, commanding the soldiers, completing the assignment. You are taught much about how to go about demonstrating through words and actions what you stand for as an officer, how you use those qualities that you have incumbent in your tenure in the military in order to help people maintain their focus, but more importantly, to be motivated and maybe even in times inspired to accomplish the mission. What are your thoughts about what things you learned in the military and why they're so relevant at this moment as we're having this conversation and really going forward in the future?
I think one of the most important things I learned was if you take care of the people and, you know, when you're taking care, you know, that's also their career, if their family, you know, are pay problems, medical problems, all of that kind of stuff, and that you choose to be an active listener, that in the end, if you take care of the people, they will take care of the mission.
Yeah. Yeah. Well said. You said two things which are incredible in terms of the direct nature and importance of them. One, you talked about taking care. Care is an invaluable quality of a leader. Would you agree?
Absolutely. I don't know how you could be a leader if you don't care, because somebody has to follow you. You know, the military kind of has a structure where that kind of makes that happen, you know, one way or the other. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the other day I was talking to a mother because she was talking, thinking about, you know, how should she advise her son about coming in the military? And so she asked me, why do we shout it? people. And I said, well, that occurs when you first kind of come in the Army because, you know, you've got to make a big change and transition. And she said, well, did you ever shout, you know, when you were in the Army? And I said, I raised my voice 2 times in 30 years. And in both cases, it was imminent danger.
Mm-hmm. And how did she respond to that?
Well, you know, we have these stereotypes, you know, and Hollywood doesn't, you know, kind of helps perpetuate that. But I mean, at the end of the day, you're dealing with people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you treat people like you would like to be treated, you know, the golden rule really does apply.
Yeah. Yeah. You also use the words active listener. I talk about that incessantly. You know, my view for all, not just for leaders, but certainly for leaders, that the greatest leaders that you can think about through your military career or otherwise are the leaders that, in fact, had as one of their qualities that they were viewed as people that were very, very good listeners. Certainly they could communicate, they could use words, they could talk, but their listening skills, that quality of being a good listener was what differentiated them from other leaders.
I think listening is really critical, and I think we can solve a lot of problems in the world if rather than barking at each other, we just kind of listen. We don't have to agree, but by listening, I at least understand where the other person is. I don't have to agree with where they're at. And in some cases, when you work for a big institution like a big company or even the Army, sometimes things happen that are unintended consequences. And I think you need to listen to people because they were hurt in some form, not physically, but just the way that something was handled. And I'm a big believer in saying, you know, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. You know, I understand how that occurred. I'm sorry that occurred. And, you know, if it's something we can fix, we can. But, you know, I can't change regulations or the way a big organization operates. Mm-hmm. I can at least account for things that happen or should happen or shouldn't have happened.
Yeah, yeah. How, again, your military career ended in what year?
2004. So I've been in the private sector for 20 years.
All right. So you spent 30 years in the military. You've got 20 years in the private sector. As a leader, if you were to look at those two portions of your life, significant spans of time, were there things in terms of how you filled the leadership role, regardless of what the task at hand was, whether you were in a coaching role, a teaching role, whatever, in either one of those time periods, were there qualities that you relied on to be able to be more successful as a leader that benefited you more in the military setting or the civilian setting? Were there any things that come to your mind that were qualities that were particularly important because of, again, the setting that you were operating and the roles that you were filling?
Well, I really believe that listening plays a big role because, you know, when I came into the private sector, you know, it's like you're being reborn. You know, because, you know, you're for 30 years, you're in the womb of the Army, and all of a sudden the Army says, we're done. And so you get reborn into a new world, you know, and this new world has its own vocabulary. It's got its own slang. It's got, I thought I had kind of mastered all that. And, you know, I hadn't. One of the reasons I'm kind of a coach today is because, as far as I'm concerned, I screwed up my transition about as bad as anybody can screw it up, you know? And, you know, after a year or so in the private sector, you say, Gosh, I wish I would have known that a year ago.
So, I think it's priceless the way you just put that. It's ironic. I've just in the last couple of days, I'm now a first time grandfather. So it's funny that you use the whole idea of being in the womb and everything at this particular moment. But it does make sense. And when I hear you say that with the depth and breadth of your experience in the military, I hear you describing that as being something which is a feature. It might be too trite a way to say it, but it's a characteristic of being in the military, and that is that you are, if it's an ideal situation, you are in a place where leaders ensure that the people that follow them are safe. Even though they will put their lives at risk for our country, but on a day-to-day basis, as they build a camaraderie, in the military during their time, that it's a safe place. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, I mean, to me, if you're in the military, I mean, the greatest asset you have is your human resources, and you don't want to put them at risk in any way. And if you're in the Army, I mean, you're in a, let's face it, it's a hazardous profession. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I was trying to explain to an executive in a oil and gas service company. He said, "Joe, you sent me this lieutenant over here, but he has no health, safety, and environmental experience." And I said, "Well, wait a second." I said, you just don't know how to talk to him. And I said, the reason I sent him over there is because he does. And he said, "Well, Joe, help me with that." And I said, "Okay. This individual was a infantry platoon leader, right? He doesn't know anything about oil and gas. He's new, kind of like when I was reborn." And I said, "But, you know, he was in charge of 40 people, 20 of which were under the age of 19. And he had to train them how to use automatic weapons and explosives. And the first thing he had to do is make sure they didn't hurt themselves mm-hmm. with their automatic weapons and explosives, mm-hmm. and then go through the process of, once all that training occurred, how to process that and use that against an enemy force and still not get hurt, mm-hmm. you know, by what the enemy's doing and or what you're doing." Mm-hmm. I said, "So he has an eye for safety and, welfare, and maybe, you know, he doesn't know exactly what to do on a rig site, mm-hmm. but I tell you what, you could walk him out there and he could tell you just about anything that might be unsafe, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. by just through his eyes, because that's all he's done is try to keep people safe." Yeah. Now, yeah. You train him on the very technical specifics that you want him to know, but he's got the eye, the leadership capacity. And I said, "In the Army, we do not do bolt-on safety." And I said, "Out here in the civilian world, a lot of times you do the bolt-on safety."
It makes sense to me, first of all, but I like the way you talk about in the military setting that safety is a critical aspect of every aspect of how they go about learning what their technical tasks are, how to use weapons, how to prepare things, and I gather from your explanation that's it, both implied but also taught to be very much aware of what's going on in your surroundings.
Right. In other words, there's the individual task of keeping you and your equipment safe and the way mm-hmm. that you're using it, right? Mm-hmm. So where I was going with that is the Army enculturates safety in everything. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. In other words, safety is inculcated in the way that you would light a burner, you know, mm-hmm. for, heating water. The whole methodology, you know, is that's all enculturated. Mm-hmm. So, and that's what I was trying to explain to this executive. I said, it's enculturated. It's not, hey, okay, here, we need to go to this school.
Let's go take a safety class. Yeah.
Go take a safety class. You need an OSHA course. Right. Okay. Yeah. I mean, I understand the OSHA has certain things and you need to know that, but mm-hmm. the general safety procedures of using a ladder, you know, using tools mm-hmm. when that was trained, single task, the task mm-hmm. of doing it. Then you have the collective task, and the safety is built into the collective task. For example, mm-hmm. if you as an individual have to shoot, move, and communicate, right? You learn that through crawl, walk, run. Then the next thing you would learn is how to do that with a buddy. Mm-hmm. Crawl, walk, run. And then once that's done, then you're doing it as an integral part of a squad or a platoon, you know, where you're being supervised and that. So that whole collective aspect has its own safety that is above and beyond the individual mm-hmm. safety, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah.
In other words, a leader's got to think ahead through this a little bit, you know.
Yeah. Well, also, you're the way I hear it, you're pointing out that that safety is integral to
right.
everything they do. It is, you know, in the industry that I serve, mostly with all of my work, the construction industry.
Right.
There's still, again, 20 and 30 years ago, safety was typically misspelled. And that was about the most important aspect of what safety was. It is very much front and center today. But I think your idea about bolting it on, I think, is an interesting way of describing it. But I will say that that today, what leaders have a responsibility to do as it relates to safety is not simply a safety of the job site where work is done, but also obviously safety of the individuals, both the individuals that are part under their charge or responsibility, as well as others that may be on or around active work sites. And so that's the construction world. And so the term is being used a lot, and you may have heard it in working with some of the folks you've worked with. They're talking about some companies have done a very good job in the last handful of years, relatively speaking, in making safety part of the culture of the company. Safety is already, and the way you described it, is integral to the culture of the military. Is that a fair
Correct.
Assessment?
Yes.
Right. So, you know, one could, you know, again, there are portions of the military that are involved in capital construction, both in the United States and worldwide, the Army Corps of Engineers, right. NAVC, and others. So they teach all these things as part of how the folks that are the engineers and the project managers and the contract administrators, how they interact with civilian contractors and other organizations. And everybody is, some people would still say that we're pushing safety. But again, there's much you can learn, something else to learn from the military. Those are my thoughts about that. And so I want to go back to kind of to the peak of it, and ask you, you know, as it relates to just that portion of your journey, those 30 years. And if you say something that we've already mentioned, the reason you're saying it again is because it's important, not because you and I are forgetting things we've talked about or just repeating ourselves. Now, I can do that pretty well, you know, but I want to ask you the question. So based on your leadership, and you would reach the highest levels of leadership in the military, but based on your view of leadership in the military, what would you say, and again, this may be repetitious, but with purpose, what would you say are the three most significant qualities that those in leadership roles in the military demonstrate?
The three most significant leadership qualities, well, mm-hmm. first of all, you have to listen, absolutely listen, because a lot of the things that you need to know or is being said,
mm-hmm.
right? Mm-hmm. And so I would, you know, I, I had no problem walking around and checking on things. I really believe that, you know, things are done well if somebody inspects them.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, and it's not a serious inspection. I'm not talking about standing up. I'm just saying going through and see if people are doing things the right way. And then secondly, if you're out there, if they're short critical material or safety equipment or something mm-hmm. that could make mm-hmm. the job go easier or faster, you know, I look at a leader as a resource provider.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yes. It's the leader's job to provide the resources at the right time and place.
Right.
I remember my battalion commanders would say, well, sir, battalion's in the field and we'd like you to come out there. And I said, well, I'll be out there tonight. And they said, well, sir, we want you to see this and that. And I said, well, the problem I have is there's only one of me mm-hmm. and I'm going to be at these critical resource meetings
mm-hmm.
and you don't miss those. Because if you do, somebody takes your resources.
Exactly.
You know,
yeah. We're just and I one, had no problem. One big happy family, you know.
I had no problem taking somebody else's
that's
resources.
Right. That's right. Yeah. There's only one know? Big bowl of spaghetti, so you better get in there and get that spaghetti. Yeah.
Yeah. You got to right,
so, so you mentioned one. I'm gonna keep you on task.
Okay.
On this. So you mentioned one listening. Two and three.
Two and three is you have to be, in my view, you have to be humble.
Wow.
The reason that you're humble and you're not, you know, all involved in yourself
mm-hmm.
is you're not approachable if you're not.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody yeah. has to feel comfortable, no matter what their station is, in communicating with you. And I'm not scared to ask questions either, mm-hmm. you know, because that's how I find out things, and I want them not to have any fear about whatever the response is. I'm just wanting to know, you know, what is the situation? What's the deal here? And you know, in my mind, okay, do I need to apply resources? Do I? Very few times did I see something that was totally unsafe where I stopped everything.
Mm-hmm.
There might be things not going quite right, but I leave that alone and find the supervisor, you know, involved and have a small conversation there. You know, mm-hmm. I didn't get involved in stuff unless it was, you know, really critical or something. Right. Somebody may right. get hurt.
Yeah. Yeah. And then three.
Three, you have to be seen.
Wow.
You have to be seen. So that means you have to get out. You know, you set the example, you know, if your troops are having physical fitness, well, I would try to run around so that all my different units, you know, at least would see me out there that I'm doing physical fitness at the same time they are.
Yeah.
You know, and if they're in the field, you know, I want to see them.
Mm-hmm.
And in that case, I would see them at night, you know, if I had critical meetings where resources were going to be discussed or divided up.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You just make sure, you know, you take care of the one way you take care of your organization is make sure it has resources.
Yeah. We could probably spend the balance of our time together and much more time talking about all the things that you learned, experienced, and practiced in the military. And it would be well to hear. But let's jump over into the other side, into the civilian
okay.
side, your last 20 years. The first thing I'm going to ask the same question. Again, based on your cumulative experience and all the different things, you've done a number of different things in these 20 years. Heavy concentration on trying to help people become better leaders is the way I would describe a chunk of what you've done. But if you were to say in terms of leadership in over the last 20 years, what you've learned by working with and helping leaders become great leaders, what would you say are the three most significant qualities in leaders that you've encountered over the last 20 years outside the military setting?
Leaders outside the military setting, you have to know how to build a consensus.
Would you put that as your first quality, consensus builder?
I mean, if you're wanting change, right, and that's what leaders do, mm-hmm. you're wanting change, or you're wanting it to go your way or your organization's way, then in my view, you have to develop the ability to know who the stakeholders are, mm-hmm. and build consensus. Mm-hmm. I never, you know, if I can avoid it, I try not to get involved in saying, this is what we need to do. I try to go to all the stakeholders and, you know, and convince them it's their idea, mm-hmm. you know, to do this. And, yeah. And then when it comes up, nobody feels blindsided.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. That's very good. That's interesting. I like it. And it makes sense to me. Two others, great qualities of great leaders.
Okay.
And they don't have to be different than the military ones. You may just pop over and use the same. But don't feel constrained. Like they're not options you can use. You can play those cards, Joe.
One of the vice presidents that worked for me, I think he's one of the leadership traits really up good and always made me laugh. He says, say what you mean. Uh-huh. Mean what you say. Uh-huh. Just don't say it mean.
I have to write that down. This is great. I think that's beautiful. That could be captured in terms. So would you say something around it is a quality that you think is important? Because what I hear when I hear those words, I hear the word that pops into my mind immediately is respect.
Well, you have to build respect. I mean, nobody trusts you. I mean, you got to earn trust.
Yeah. Yes.
You know,
yes.
And it's the same way in the military. The military, at least when you're initially put in something, it has a structure where, hey, you know, by the Uniform Code of Military Justice, he's in a position or she's in a position to tell you something, and basically you got to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And so in the military, you try to get everything, at least I tried to get everything done without ever having to resort to authority.
Yes. In other words,
you can get things done mm-hmm. without resorting to authority. Mm-hmm. Things just go simpler.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. And, so what's your third thought on over the last 20 years? Good to great leaders in terms of quality.
Good to great leaders.
Yeah.
It comes in what that saying is, goes back to, because it covers a lot of things. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of times they say, we're going to do this, right? You know, we're going to change. And, you know, whoever is buying into that has to commit that you're going to do it at the top and you're going to do it from the bottom. And it's better when it's done at the top, headed down, and it started at the bottom, heading up.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, it's just stuff that falls on deaf ears, and we waste time, money, and resources, you know, because change is not easy. It can occur.
Yeah.
But everybody's got to, grab an oar and row their part of the boat.
Yeah. Agree. Well said. All right, so we're getting down to the end of our time together. Again, you and I could probably talk. In fact, I know that our first conversation, we just kept talking, but this is not happening because Juan will pull the plug. He'll take you off the screen permanently again. He's a mean producer. He's a mean guy. He's a mean guy, and he'll probably edit this out, but that's okay too. I've got, in your introduction, I talked about you being an award-winning co-author of a book on LinkedIn. You know from our earlier conversation that when I talk about the importance of soft skills, people's qualities, that I in fact came up with some help. The title of my book is actually an analogy. So the title of the book, as you know, is Soft as Steel. And the analogy is that steel is to structures that are intended to be built and be able to last for a long time, as soft skills are to building relationships that will last for a long time. I see what you've done here in the LinkedIn as and you talk about it in terms of professional advancement, networking. Again, networking and professional advancement, all just those words dance around the idea of if you're going to be successful, the path to success is through building relationships. If that's a fair kind of a fundamental consideration, what was the reason why you wrote this book, and how does it fit into tell the listeners how it fits into the work you're doing, and why do you think it's a valuable lesson?
Okay, so LinkedIn's been around for about 21 years. They came out, it came out in 2003. I got on it in 2004, after I'd gotten out of the military, and used it in a civilian application. We were doing wastewater treatment infrastructure in China, and the problem was, where could I find Chinese or people that had worked in China and worked projects, especially, wastewater? And so at that time, all you had was these big search firms that claimed they had, 500,000 resumes and all this kind of stuff. And so we did that. We said, hey, we need somebody that's got done this. And so they tried for 6 months, kept one third of our money, and said, we did our best effort and we didn't find anybody. And so I got on LinkedIn and started looking for people that had experience in China, and any experience. And then that would start with a note. And I get a phone number and I talk to them and say, look, do you know anybody when you were over there? So it was the old way of getting, four people to call. Mm-hmm. But the point is, I found people using this tool, and I really started using it as best I could, both for the benefit of the company. And then I saw the potential. And then I saw the potential that if you use LinkedIn and somebody fills it out, that's come out of the military and just puts their jobs down and their experiences, I could help them translate that into hiring a manager vernacular.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I did a lot of, it was kind of my ministry for 19 years, helping people left and right. And so then I became later on, a friend of mine said, hey, this big company wants to open up a search firm in Houston. I want to handle the engineering side. I'll handle the oil and gas. And so we did, and they trained us, and away we went. But when somebody finds out you're in executive search or just, a search firm, everybody wants to contact you and say, hey, I'm out here. I'm looking for a job. Hey, can you help me with my resume? Can you help me with a LinkedIn profile? And so the company had a rule that you don't talk to job seekers. You work for us, you do our thing. So I talked to job seekers before work, at lunch and after work, and helped them. And so anyway, that first batch did real well. They got interviews, they got hired, and then they told all their friends and family. And then the next thing I was getting calls at 5 o'clock in the morning, 11 o'clock at night. And my wife said, hey, either go back to your day job, or make a business out of this. And I said to her, I said, why do you think this would be a good business? And she said something like, Joe, I'm listening to you talk to these people and you sound like you're developing officers in the Army. And then it was a blinding flash of the obvious, right? That, oh my gosh, all I've done all my life is career develop people. And so this was just a natural extension. It's kind of my gift as well as my passion. I'm fairly decent at it. So that's when I opened up the ability to work at this.
You were doing searching and finding people, let's say the old-fashioned way. You encountered LinkedIn and you began to try to channel how you went about finding people into that platform to try to be able to use the reach of that platform as it was maturing over time. Is that a fair way of saying it?
Right. And I've been on it 20 years now. So the people that I connected with 10 or 15 years ago, they're now CEOs and chief operating officers and board members and, But just like you said, relationships are a lot. And so these people I connected with a long time ago have reached back out to me and say, hey, can you help my chief financial officer with this aspect? I think he needs developing this. Can you help my COO with this?
So terrific.
I've gotten a lot of consulting work, you know, really just helping people be a better version of themselves.
Yeah. Well, and it's something which you know this well, and this is not specific to the construction industry or any industry individually, but getting skilled workers at the entry level, at the apprentice level in construction and the building trades is a huge challenge. There's also a huge challenge finding people both at the entry level as well as mid-level positions to fill a variety of positions in engineering, project management, you name it. There are lots of opportunities, but it's challenging to find people. So what you've done and carried it into publishing your book is to give, particularly of our generation of technology-adverse individuals, something if they give it a try, they're going to find that they can increase their efficiency in doing the most important thing that they have to do for their business fundamentally, and that is to make sure they continue to find, hire, and retain the best talent they can find.
Yes, and so, you know, I've coached 725 people to date, and people will always say, well, why do you have to tell me a number? And I said, well, I measure my production. And I said, if you're going to work with me and you can't measure what you produce, you know, save your time and your money.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if you just say you're generally a good guy, well, 1,000 generally good guys and gals in the system. But if you want to be seen and you want to be found, you better know what you bring to the table. And that's the first thing I look at when I look at LinkedIn profiles, about 8 seconds, you know.
Yeah.
Hey,
yeah.
You know, can you measure your production? If not, and I can find somebody that can, you know, I'm leaving your profile and I'm probably never coming back.
Maybe we need to have a special edition of the Soft to Steel podcast focused entirely on how to use LinkedIn. I'm sure somebody's done it as a topic, but it would be outside my normal area of conversation, but might be an interesting thing to do. Joe, this is it. We can't talk anymore. We must stop talking now. You'll be able to loosen your tie momentarily once you hang out. This has been interesting. I knew it was going to be a good conversation. I hope you take it as an indication of interest and respect, talking a lot about your military background. But I think that, you know, people misunderstand a lot of institutions in our country. And I think as it relates to the things that are good about organizations, much of that has come out of the military. You put down the guns, you pick up a pen or a laptop or something else, you pick up a phone. These are the tools of the trade for a lot of human beings. But I think there's a lot to be learned about organization, about structure, and probably most important, and I love the way you said it, about leaders who listen, are humble, and are seen by the people they lead. Joe, thanks so much for being on the Soft to Steel podcast.
Hey, thank you for having me. This has been an enjoyable interaction, and I appreciate it.
I hope we'll certainly talk again. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Dennis.
Thanks for joining us today for this episode of the Soft to Steel podcast with your host, Dennis Duran. Dennis is the author of Soft to Steel and a leading speaker and trainer for organizations across many industries and verticals. To learn more about the work Dennis is doing to activate soft skills in the workplace, contact him at DennisDuranSpeaking.com. Be sure to check out his book, Soft as Steel, on Amazon or wherever books are sold. You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes or wherever you'd like to get your podcasts. And please remember to share this episode with your friends, colleagues, and anyone you feel would benefit from the conversation. We'll see you next time on the Soft as Steel podcast with Dennis Duran.
Produced by Audavita Studios. Connect your voice to the world.